It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 92% always is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
Alex Toronto's here.
Woo!
It's like not even special anymore. You're not even in the nice chair anymore. Like,
yeah,
we put you in
I
the nice chair
out
for a while.
Yeah.
Now you're just now you're just in the average Joe chair. And speaking of average
Joe's,
it's
like we've been dating.
Hello,
for a while.
Joe Packovitz.
Joe Packovitz as well.
I hear you.
So, this was supposed to be our X-Men Apocalypse podcast, which three out of the four of us have seen, and I'm sure we'll get to. But this week, the internet went insane twice, and Elliot challenged me on Facebook about not having him on, and then didn't see the movie. So there are two major things happening. Actually, the three major announcements was the X-Men Apocalypse movie is now out. Captain America in the latest issue of Marvel has revealed that he's working for Hydra, and then DC rebooted their entire universe, which we've been warning you about for months, in an 80-page special called DC Rebirth. The entire internet has gone insane. I have the same reaction to all three of these things, which was, So I figured, let me load the room with people who have very strong opinions, because I have yet to muster one about any of these announcements. So the first one, probably the hottest one, the one that won't calm down online, is Captain America. It's Nick Spencer's first issue, the last panel reveal. People have lost their minds.
Hail Hydra. You know, now, the thing about it, and this is the thing that, people, you said, have lost their minds. And it's just, it's classic outrage mob. We're talking the virtual pitchforks have been out on Twitter and in social media. And I even, in the beginning, I was having a little fun with it. I joked about it. And for those who haven't read it yet, I mean, although let's face it, if you didn't read it, they pretty much gave away the big reveal on the internet. It was like Captain America issue one was like the crying game. You know, if you knew that the gal that was really a guy instead of being a gal, you would have that spoiled the whole movie for you.
Yeah.
You know.
Was a whole now I did not read the issue because actually Steven sold out. How quick did it take you to sell out?
By Friday we were out.
Yeah, because when I
came out this past Wednesday.
I came over Friday and we all met to go to the movies and it was gone. So I did not get a chance to read it. Was it a completely separate story and they were like, oh, by the way, Here's that little, it's like a post-credit sequence where they screwed you, or did it all kind of build up?
It kind of builds in a way, right? You think you're getting another origin of Steve Rogers' story.
Yeah.
You know, they start talking, there are all these flashbacks where they go back to Rogers' parents and his mom.
Yeah, and his dad's like an alcoholic.
Yeah, and during 1920s, you know, Depression era America and all this stuff is going on. And as Captain America is having your by the numbers, you know, Captain America adventure, trying to stop a guy who's a suicide bomber. And then we start seeing a little bit about him, why the guy goes into becoming a suicide bomber. And then we see the Red Skull, who is essentially Donald Trump, turned up to 12. Now, I mean,
By the way, have you seen the Lego store in Water Tower Place in downtown Chicago?
No. They have a Lego Trump?
They have a Lego Chicago skyline. And on the Trump Tower, there's a little Dr. Doom.
Every other building has a superhero. Oh, right. Trump Tower has Dr. Doom.
That's awesome.
I'm going there. So then you get to the end, and this whole reveal takes place that Cap at the end says, Hail Hydra. So you find out he's like a deep cover agent, which that's on the surface of the first issue. And interviews later on, Tom Brevoort and Nick Spencer said that because, you know, they're essentially revealing that Cap has always been working for Hydra from the very beginning. From the moment that Steve Rogers became Captain America, he was always a Hydra agent. And that's when people went batshit.
Yeah.
And then batshit is fine, okay? And I will admit, I have been a part of that outrage mob in the past. I remember Dan Slott and Superior Spider-Man when you found out that Doc Ock, switched bodies with Peter Parker and basically left Peter Parker to die. And I was really angry. How could you kill Parker? This is also knowing in the back of my head that this stuff never keeps. It never sticks.
Right.
It made me uncomfortable. Just like reading Cap say Hail Hydra at the end of Steve Rogers' Captain America made me uncomfortable. I was like, damn, why'd they do that? And I even said, when I reviewed the book on my, I did a brief review of it on my Facebook page. I even said, you know what? Yeah, it's a setup, but I'm really not interested in it at this point. I have no interest in seeing Captain America as a villain. And then the internet outrage kept kicking in and kicking in, and people kept going, how terrible it is, and how could you do this? And, Marvel is anti-Semitic because they've made Captain America a Nazi and blah, blah, blah. And I went, oh, you know what? I think I want to read this now. You know, you have beat on it for so much. I'm like, you know what? No, I want to see how this plays out.
See where it goes. We get the books on Tuesday, and I, check them in and then, do all that shit. So, Tuesday night, I'm sitting there. I got my stack of books. Store's quiet. I closed, and I'm just reading comic books. And I read it, and I was like, okay. And I went on to the next issue of Ms. Marvel or whatever came out that week. Because, does anyone who's losing their mind actually read fucking comic books? This shit happens every fucking week.
Yeah, nobody stays dead.
It's I didn't hear about the spoiler on Yahoo, I guess the front page Yahoo spoiled it the day before it came out. I don't really go on Yahoo, but if no one told me that this was some crazy thing to get outraged about, I'd been like, oh. A new issue of Captain America. Remember when, the Red Skull told him that, hey, you have blonde hair and you have blue eyes and Operation Rebirth was a deep Nazi, blah, blah, blah. We were trying to create you. You work for us. It's this isn't they did brand new, unbelievable shit anymore. It's just, it's a fucking issue of Captain America, for Christ's sake.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing now. I think the timing was really good because Captain America Civil War is out. And I read one really good article, and I'm kicking myself because I don't know exactly where it's from. I want to say it's Comic Book Resources, maybe Newsarama, but one of the major ones was the main point they brought out was why don't they just do Captain America stories now? Captain America is, they said, arguably their flagship character. This movie's doing great. The Captain America movies are the best of Marvel Studios. And then they went back and they were like, ever since 2007, we never get a Captain America. They kill him and then he's Bucky. And then they send him into a Dimension Z. And then they make him old. And now they're making him evil. And it reminded me of what they did with Batman when the Nolan movies were coming out, right around the time of Dark Knight, which is arguably one of the peaks of Batman's popularity, they killed off Bruce Wayne and made him Dick Grayson. And at that time, I was wondering, wait, aren't you good? You're going to get all this extra attention for this character. Don't you want to have that classic character in place for new readers? And then I read a comment on that article, which turned my whole head around. Was somebody said, well, I don't care because it's not going to affect the movies. And that's when I realized, oh, the comics aren't even that important anymore.
Yeah, no, you think if there's 300,000 comic book readers in the country, they're saying, that read and go to stores weekly or whatever. That's not a fraction of... That's 3% of people go see a movie. That's 300,000 that went to see Captain America. They don't give a shit.
No, the movies are first.
Yeah.
Video games are second.
Yeah.
And those two will now drive what you read in the comic books, because the comic books are third.
Yeah, and we've known that for a while. We've talked about that for a while. But the thing is, coming from comics, we've always seen these movies as an interpretation.
Yeah.
Christopher Reeve is Superman, and Tim Burton is Batman. Tim Burton has made Michael Keaton Batman. Tim Burton wasn't actually Batman, which would be...
I guess he did put the suit on, they said.
They said he put the suit on to know what Michael
just
Keaton
was. Just to know how
like.
Awful it was.
I could just imagine him just all hunched over, his bad posture. I think it's kind of uncomfortable. but we always saw these. They're always kind of one-offs. You know, it's like, oh, this guy's going to be Batman, and we're going to do it this way. Tobey Maguire's going to be Spider-Man, and we're going to kind of do this story. But didn't realize till now that Marvel Studios is up and running, and as we've been seeing, you're not getting Captain America 3, you're getting Marvel Chapter 14. Now we have this established continuity in the movie universe, which, yes, way more people are seeing, and this is the first time I've really felt that the comics, which you were always kind of driving everything creatively, has taken a back step, and maybe that's what Marvel's thinking. Marvel knows they're not going to get an extra 50,000 people who saw Civil War to start reading Captain America because they went, oh, we love Captain America. Those people are going to wait for Avengers 3.
And you know what?
But something like this will excite the 300,000 people that were already reading.
I'm trying to think. The last number one for Captain America was All New Captain America, which was Falcon as Cap. And I still have it. And the number one before that was Astonishing Captain America by Brubaker. They tried to do like another Captain America book, and John's making a face that you guys can't see.
I don't even remember it. No,
it's the face of what are you talking about? And that's how poorly it sold. So this is pretty much Marvel being like, all right, like rattle the cage, guys. Nick Spencer, what do you want to do? What's crazy? Let's make Cap a deep cover Hydra agent. He's been a Hydra agent since he was like 12 years old. Okay,
and they can do that because there used to be an idea that fans had, whether you're fans of Doctor Who or comics or whatever, that there was canon.
Yeah.
There is no canon anymore. We're living in the post-manga anime universe where you can have two completely different versions of the same universe or the same story going on simultaneously, and they're unconnected. You can be a fan of one, the fan of the other, a fan of both. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I think, like, this story's going to end exactly how anybody with, like, half a dozen brain cells to rub together. Captain America's a child, saw a flyer for, like, a Hydra thing, went in there, said, these guys are really bad guys, but I'm going to be a deep cover agent and take the whole thing down. Like, guess how this thing's going to work out? Does anyone really, really think they're going to make Captain America a Hydra agent? It's like when they killed Superman. It's like, of course they're bringing him back because they're not fucking idiots. Like, why would they make him a Hydra agent permanently?
There were a couple of times in the 90s where they didn't have an out. And I think that's what long-term fans worry about. Like the Clone Saga.
Right.
When they really wanted to make Ben Reilly Peter Parker and just move on in that direction. And at the same time, it was a much lesser story, but they had killed off Reed Richards and Doctor Doom in Fantastic Four. And they made, like, Invisible Woman the leader, and she brought in Ant-Man to fill out the four. And both of those stories just kept kind of running. And it was clear, like, they didn't know how to end this thing. And no, I feel like no one's ever done that since. Like, every time they've started this story of, we're going to kill the character, we're going to make him evil, we're going to get rid of him, we're going to replace him. And we've said on the show before, every major superhero has been replaced at least once.
Yeah. But
they always know how to reverse it.
And yeah, and to that point, like you're saying, is in the 90s, I think there was a lot of fly by the seat of our pants. Who cares? We'll figure this shit out as we go because the sales are going through the roof or there was the big boom. But now it's like Marvel has summits and fucking Joe Quesada isn't going to sit down. This is the guy who wants Spider-Man to be a teenager living in his Aunt May's house in Queens because he's so freaked out about the character being unrecognizable. We really think that dude sat in a room with Nick Spencer is like, yeah, he could be a Hydra agent forever. Change it forever. And make sure Superior Spider-Man, make sure Doc Ock is Peter Parker forever. They don't let these guys write these stories anymore without saying, okay, how do you work that out? How are you going to get it back to what it's supposed to be for the next generation?
I mean, we had Mark Millar do that less than 10 years ago. He made Wolverine.
Yeah.
An assassin of the hand for 12 issues.
Yeah.
And he attacked the Fantastic Four and
I murdered North Star, whoever.
I have the premiere hardcovers because it was a great story. And
yeah.
At that time when it started, Hugh Jackman was Wolverine in the movies and Wolverine was as major a character as he is now. And nobody thought, oh my God, this is terrible. Wolverine's not supposed to be a ninja assassin. I think it's just timing and I guess a slow geek news day. I mean, you have a couple of other things going on.
Well,
go on.
I was going to say the surprising thing for me is when it first blew up, I thought, okay, what's the political angle here? Because, I mean, Captain America, let's face it, he's such a politically loaded character, and we live in politically loaded times. I really can't discern like a political slant to it. It's not like the lefties are going crazy or the righties are going crazy. It's just sheer comic books, which is surprising.
And what's really interesting, Nick Spencer, if you've read his run, he's like my age. He's like a millennial writer. So, yeah, he's actually from Chicago, but I think he lives in London now or something. He's, like, from the South Side. And he's, but it's very, like, millennial-driven in the sense where when they brought in Falcon as Captain America, they were talking about how there's all this, like, hate rhetoric towards minorities crossing borders. And, like, Falcon went to fight racists who were, like, trying to kill people crossing the border. Like, he's the writer is taking a very political stance with Captain America.
Was Nick Spencer doing that last run of Captain America with Sam Wilson?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Because I don't usually read Captain America. The last time I tried to read Captain America was because General Romita Jr. was drawing it, and then he fought Arnim Zola on, like, some bizarre planet. And
he was
like,
in a Dimension Z for
I was like, I want to see General Romita Jr. draw tanks and helicopters, and and I haven't been back since. But I do know Nick Spencer wrote Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Right, and that
which both of you in this room kept recommending fantastic. To me.
Oh, it's great. Well, he's on Ant-Man right now, and his Ant-Man is awesome, and it's like, it's all about, like, apps, and it's like, one of the Ant-Man villains creates an app called Hench, and it's like, so a guy like Whirlwind can go on and, like, get a job, you know, anywhere. It's like, it's awesome. Great. It's like, he basically made, like, an Uber for supervillains. And it's been a great book. So it's like,
so this is not a hack, is what.
No,
is
this
what
guy
saying,
knows
yeah.
what he's doing, and he's got a lot of good ideas. And like I said, all his books are very, like, they just feel that he's kind of like the writer of my generation, where it's like everything he's writing about is shit that's going on. Like I said, his Captain America book's very political with all the crazy Trump build a wall, you know, hate Muslim shit that's going on. His Ant-Man book's all about these apps and these idiots trying to, like, you know, there's an Uber app, and then there's a, what's the other one that's like Uber? There's another one that came out.
Lyft.
And it's like, so there's Hench, and then there's another one that's like, there's like two guys with competing, like, henchman apps, and it's like, it's hilarious, it's awesome. So this guy's not like just some Joe Blow guy that they gave the reins to Captain America to. This guy's like the next, calling him the next Bendis is a little unfair, I think, but he's like the next big young writer.
Maybe the next Fraction.
Guy will be doing the big event book in like 2 years. You know, he's the one that did that assault on Pleasant Hill that led into Civil War II. That was him. Like, this guy, they're grooming this guy to be, like, the next big, like, event writer. And it's like, so this isn't just, like, he's just some knucklehead that Marvel's like, yeah, do whatever you want. No one's going to read this book.
So he's got an end game. I don't think
he has to.
There's no one in this room that doesn't think he's got a way out of this story.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, I mean, regardless of whether he has a way out of the story or not, and this is another thing that it's kind of bothering me. I mean, if you don't like the idea, fine. But the thing that's really rankling me right now, and I've had people arguing this to me on social media, is the whole, well, one, that if you make Captain America a Hydra agent, that means he's a Nazi. If he's a Nazi, he's an anti-Semite. Okay, so how can you make Captain America, who fought the Nazis from his inception, now be against Jewish people? Which is, to me, you are reaching big time when you go that far.
That's someone who has an agenda and is pushing it as hard as they can to make it fit that agenda.
They're pushing it really hard, though. I mean, it's getting pushed very hard. Now,
I mean, Hydra, even in the Captain America movie, which takes place in World War II, it's clearly established that Hydra is not the Nazi party.
Yeah, there's like a science division, they call them, like a rogue science division. And like, no question, Hydra is like a crazy cult group that wants to take over the world. But they're not Nazis. Like, even in the
comics,
they
weren't running a country.
Yeah, it's like, even in the comics, they're evil S.H.I.E.L.D. They're more Cobra from, like, G.I. Joe than they are Nazis.
Yeah, and that was always, I loved G.I. Joe when I was a kid, but when I got older, I had read that they brought, Hasbro brought the figures to Archie Goodwin. And he said, oh, that's great. And they're like, this one's the commando, and this one's the machine gunner, and this one drives a Jeep. And then Archie Goodwin went, great, who do they fight? And Hasbro just stared at each other. Because G.I. Joe in the 70s, the 12 inches, they were just guys that climbed mountains and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Archie Goodwin went, don't worry, we'll figure that out. And it was very obvious in those early issues where he just turned to Larry Hama and was like, they fight Hydra.
Right, just call them Cobra.
Yeah, Cobra instead of Hydra. Yeah. It's the same thing. And then what made me love G.I. Joe was just how crazy Cobra got. This guy's got a metal head, and this guy's a shapeshifter, and these guys are bikers.
Right.
This girl has glasses. These guys are identical twins. It turned into like the Army versus the Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
See, and that if you keep it on that level, I think that's where you can say the story is fun. Yes, it still makes me a bit uncomfortable, but it's still...
It's supposed to make you uncomfortable for the character.
Yeah, right. But it's like one of those, like, I wouldn't say I'm uncomfortable. I'm more like, oh, okay, like, I wonder how this is going to play out. Like, but I have customers that came in that were, like, furious. And it's just like...
They were burning the books, man.
They were burning the book?
A guy
is that why it sold out?
Yeah, posted on Vine. He had the book. He posted a Vine pouring lighter fluid on it and setting it on fire.
Jesus.
That reminds me, have you guys seen The Ruddles?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There's a great joke in there about when they're making fun of John Lennon saying the Beatles were bigger than Jesus, and they were saying people were burning the Lord's albums. They were buying them just to burn them. Sales went through the roof.
Yeah, and I guess that's like, did you see the meme where it's from Age of Ultron where Cap rips the log in half?
Yeah, and they did the same.
They put the cover, and it's like, all right, that's like clever. Somebody's having fun, but it's like, if you're burning a comic book.
You know who burned books, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who burned
Hydra?
Think for 2 seconds about the historical implications of book burning.
Hydra's dad. Hydra's dad would burn books.
And then remember that it's a fucking comic book. Is there nothing like
The irony is completely lost.
Not only is the irony lost, but like a day ago, like two or three like ships sank from like Syrian refugees, like are all dead in the Mediterranean trying to like flee a war zone, and you're like, Captain America, burn it. It's like there's nothing else for you to get like that upset about.
Gorilla tried to eat a 3-year-old at a zoo
today. And
they
murdered the gorilla. And it's like there's nothing else going on in your world that you have time to buy a comic book, get lighter fluid, film it, and put it on the internet.
I always go back to this one video, and it wasn't even viral. It just got passed around that week. But Mattel sells the He-Man figures directly through their website. So the first time they put out Battle Cat, like, he sold out immediately. And then a guy put a video, and this was, like, back when you had to, like, get a digital camera, then upload it to your computer, then put it on the internet. And it was him screaming at his computer that Battle Cat was sold out. And he's clearly, like, 36.
Yeah.
And he, like, leans right into the camera and yells, "How can I have a He-Man without a Battle Cat?" And that's a moment that I've kept that as like a goalpost for myself of like, how crazed a fan.
Never get to this point.
Yeah. That's the level where you go, it's a toy.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not even, it's a comic book. It's a story.
Yeah. I would love to know the percentage of people that not only didn't read the issue and are with the pitchforks and all this shit, or that are lifelong Captain America readers. Like I said, there's only 300,000 comic book readers.
I'm telling you right
now.
And
Captain America is not the number one book.
It is nowhere near the number one book.
I don't read it, and I like Captain America.
Oh, if it's in the top 25, I'd be shocked.
Oh, Captain America, no, it's not even in the top 50. Yeah. I did a bit. Sam Wilson, Captain America, was 61. Barely selling
ranking.
30,000. Yeah, 61 out of 100. Oh. Barely selling over 30,000 copies.
Whenever I hear a number like that, I always like to point out that the first comic I ever made, The Horseman issue 0, sold 25,000 copies, and no one knows who the fuck I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how low Captain America sells now.
It's crazy.
Hey, you sold more than my Army of Darkness run. So anyway.
That's because it was in 1996.
Oh, right, yeah. He was in the boom.
So, wait, hold on. I'm going to stick my finger in my mouth. I'm going to test the wind. I'm going to tell you right now the number of people who were actually angry about the comic and ranted about it, who actually read the comic, 0.003%.
Yeah.
Probably.
Of the people that are losing their minds.
Who are losing their minds. The rest had never read it before.
Yeah, and they didn't.
And didn't read it this week.
Yeah, didn't pick
right.
it up.
Right, and they're just like, they saw the headline, and like I said, it was a book I read. And it didn't even occur to me that this was going to be a fucking thing we'd have to talk about. It was just another issue for me.
And that's, you know what? And that's the same thing. Even Marvel is surprised by it. Nick Spencer has come out and said they are all surprised that people were that bonkers. They knew they were going to make some sort of ripple.
Right.
But they're saying Captain America, I mean, that book sucked the air out of DC Rebirth.
Yeah,
people weren't even talking about Rebirth afterwards.
It's crazy.
And you know, when he died, Marvel was kind of prepared for it. And like the major media coverage picked it up. And that was before he had a movie. And this is just way, this is like beyond that. Like Marvel knows when something's going to blow up virally.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and that, we're totally unprepared.
They weren't. And then everyone's going, well, they shouldn't have marketed it that way. The problem I have with it, I didn't read the book, but they marketed it that way. I'm going, no, they didn't. You look at the cover of that book. It looks like your run-of-the-mill Captain America book.
It really does. And we ordered it like the run-of-the-mill relaunch Captain America book. We didn't order it. They didn't tell us this crazy thing was going to happen. Like you said, they probably got
They warn you.
Like, you could read the solicitations for that book for 3 months ago when I ordered it, and it's just, he's on the cover, and it's
the cover of that book is, look at Captain America's new costume, which I don't like.
Yeah. And it was pretty much, that was the biggest thing that was supposed to be about this book, is he has a new costume, and he has a stupid new shield with, like, a laser on it. That was it. That was what we were expecting. And then everyone lost their goddamn minds.
So you're saying that now Marvel even accidentally is taking a crap on whatever DC does?
Yeah.
Well, using that as a segue. Let's talk about DC Rebirth, which is
supposed to be the hottest book.
It was supposed
to
be the biggest thing. It was a $2.99 book that was 80 pages. Geoff Johns wrote it. All of his favorite guys were on it. Phil Jimenez and Ethan Van Sciver and Gary Frank, the people that have done all his big books. And this is supposed to be like the end of the New 52 and the beginning of something better. And again, my opinion was, I read it. I felt like I had to read it fast because everybody was trying to spoil it on social media. So I read it as quickly as I could and got to the end of it and went, oh, okay. Like, it just, to me, the book just seemed like reverse Flashpoint. Was like, remember everything we did with Flashpoint? Let's undo that and let's use the Flash as our central character to do it again.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, well, fine. If just the same way I was with Flashpoint. I was like, if the books are going to get better creatively, then I'm all for it. If not, then I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the book everyone was calling about. Like, every person I talked to on Wednesday was asking about this book. But yeah, it is. I mean, it was good. It was okay. Like, it wasn't like some horrific train wreck. Like, it was a good book. It sets up where they're going. Like, for those of you that, I mean, this is gonna be super spoilery, I guess. But like, they're pretty much bringing Watchmen into the DC universe. And
yeah, that was the big reveal, which I don't really get, because when you read the end of Watchmen, there ain't no Watchmen no more.
Yeah. And I don't know. People can be upset, and I'm sure Alan Moore is like pissed off, but fuck Alan Moore.
Alan Moore is always pissed off.
Yeah, I don't could give a fuck about Alan Moore right now.
The best thing Alan Moore ever did, you ever see the Simpsons episode he did?
No.
Was he's at a signing. They go to like a comic book store. I forget. I think they go to a convention.
It was the new hipster comic shop that was opening in Springfield.
That was what they was putting the comic shop guy out of business.
Right.
And Alan Moore was there, and he actually did the voice, and Milhouse is like, he's like, I loved Watchmen, but I really like the animated series Baby Watchmen. And they have like a cover of them all as like little like anime babies.
That's awesome.
And I feel like Alan Moore just looks at everything DC does as Baby Watchmen.
So it's like, you know, that's going to be like, I don't know, next year it'll be the Watchmen versus the Justice League. Like, that's what we're leading to.
Because before Watchmen sold really well.
Yeah, right. And, you know, like I said, if Alan Moore has, like, a problem with it, he could go fuck himself because
those are all Charlton characters.
They're all Charlton characters, and it's like work for hire, dude. It's like, it's not like you in the 80s didn't know what you were doing because Jack Kirby, you know, wasn't dying as a super rich
Jack
dude.
Kirby was just trying to buy a cabbage every week.
Yeah, you know, and it's like,
my wife's hungry. So, what do you want me to draw?
Right. So Alan Moore could make whatever stick he wants, but it's like, you're fine, you little Satanist shithead. Like, relax.
Well, I just wonder, you know, is it just because that they need new material to keep the copyright for Watchmen? Because they haven't really done anything. It's like, why we periodically get Doctor Strange or She-Hulk books? Because they don't want to lose the rights.
I think the thing with Watchmen, though, I'm gonna kind of disagree with you, Steve, although I see where you're coming from, and after a while, Alan Moore talking and griping about things does get kind of, you know, okay, we've heard it before. Although, actually, he never talks about it. People always come to him and say, so what are you going to say about it now?
Yeah,
and
like, they should just leave him alone.
And he's,
like when they made the movie.
Right, and he said, I don't want to talk about it anymore. Pretty much leave it alone. But he did have an agreement. If the book ever went out of print, you know, it was going to be his property. And he did want to do it with, I would have understood more if he did do it with the Charlton characters and then it took off. And then DC said, oh, we're going to just keep this going.
Yeah, but
going.
He brought the script into Len Wein and he said, we just bought these characters. You can't ruin them.
Right. But I'm just saying, if he had done that, But then DC turns around and says, well, no, because we bought these characters, they're our property. You know, we're going to just keep them under this work for hire contract. But no, they told him, if it ever gets to a point where we're just not publishing them, they're yours. And yet they kind of took off the way it did. They weren't expecting that. That's another thing that no one expected. And it seems like every time DC gets a chance to just go, oh, you know what? Hey, yeah. Let's do something with Watchmen. So we keep it out there, and that trade paperback keeps going and so on.
And the trade paperback is like Dark Knight Returns. There's always some version of it. Mm-hmm. Like Absolute comes out, and now the Absolute's out of print. Well, now there's a deluxe hardcover. That goes out of print. Now there's a trade. And the reason it's out there is because it continues to sell.
People buy it.
There are plenty of great stories. You know what? The Neil Adams Batman books were out of print for like a year or two before that omnibus came out, and that's pretty high level. You know, if they sold like Watchmen, they would never go out of print.
Yeah, and that's
but the other thing that happened with Alan Moore was Paul Levitz promised him that they would never do anything without him. The same way Marvel promised Frank Miller they would never bring Elektra back from the dead, and then the management changed. You know, Paul Levitz was out at the end of when the New 52 happened. Dan DiDio's like, those characters make money, let's do it with them. And then, like, didn't really care about that, you know, handshake agreement.
Yeah, and I guess that's my point. Is it's, you know, the company shouldn't be routinely screwing over creators. But it's not like there wasn't fucking 40 years of precedent of artists and writers getting screwed over before Alan Moore did Watchmen.
The industry was built on that.
Right. So it's like, you know, the guy goes on about how smart he is. Well, what the fuck did you think was going to happen? It's like they're company characters. It's like, yeah, you created him or changed Charlton characters. But it's like, they paid you for that job. And it's like, I get your point why he's salty. They should just leave that crazy man in the woods wherever he is to be the next Unabomber. But it's like, you know, fucking, what do you think they're going to do? That even that movie was terrible, but it made $1 billion or whatever. It's like,
it didn't do that well.
Whatever. But
which is why nobody understands why they gave Zack Snyder everything after that.
Totally get you. But it's like, as soon as that movie got made, that dude should have just been like, well, that's it for Watchmen. Like, you know, Alan Moore, go write something else. Go create your own thing.
Yeah, and that's what Dave Gibbons did.
Yeah.
You know, Dave Gibbons drew the whole thing, and he was like, he was working for DC. He was writing Green Lantern Corps for a little while. And he was like, yeah, it was a good book. He was like, you want to reprint my art, IDW? Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you know, I don't know if I like this movie. I don't know if I really want
to. But I'll cash the enormous paycheck they're going to give me for it.
Yeah, and it's like, that book's that book. Go ahead and read that book. Like, he doesn't take it personally that they've taken it away from him and done other things. He sees it as work for hire.
Yeah.
I would say the other thing about that, too, and it's funny that everyone's all up trying to dovetail this with the whole Captain America thing. How could you do that to Jack Kirby? How dare you do this with his creations? You have people online saying, how could Marvel do that to Jack Kirby with Captain America and blah, blah, blah? And yet on the other hand, they're like, fuck Alan Moore. You know, I'm like, wait a minute. It's kind of like if they were both
work for hire.
That's what I'm saying. It's like they were both work for hire. And it's like,
I think it's that Alan Moore did better financially than Kirby. Kirby lived a middle-class life until he died.
Yeah.
And Alan Moore did very well.
And and I am fully aware of how people, oh yeah, that's right. People were all up in arms on how Marvel is treating a Kirby creation now. Where were they when Marvel and the Kirby estate were having it out over in that lawsuit?
Yeah. And
how many people took Marvel's side during that whole thing?
Right.
I mean, we have this revisionist history in our, you know, fandom.
Yeah, or Joe Simon's family or Jerry Siegel's family.
Yeah.
Right.
Jerry Siegel sued for decades.
And people are going, how could he do that?
Jerry Siegel gave up a few times and was like, well, I'll create another Superman. Here's the Spectre. And realized that lightning doesn't always strike twice.
Yeah, right. You can't do it again. And, you know, like I said, it's something where I sympathize with, like, the creators. But it's like, it was work for hire. And it's something where, you know, the time Jack Kirby died in the 90s, and he sued Marvel for how long? Like you said, these movies weren't getting made. There wasn't social media, so no one gave a shit. Now everyone's doing this, like, oh, how dare you? And it's like, it's a corporate character. It's like fucking, you know.
And to be fair, his name's on all those movies. There was a fight before Captain America because, come on, he and Joe Simon created that character before there was a Marvel.
Right.
And then, but then after that, I think it was one of the X-Men movies they started to put his name on. And now I will give DC credit because now I see Bill Finger's name on stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen that. Like, his name is on Gotham. His name was on Batman versus Superman. Like, now it says Bob Kane with Bill Finger. And Bob Kane actively tried to erase Bill Finger from history.
Yeah.
So I... In terms of credit, they've gotten a little better.
And the creators are getting money, too, for when the characters they create show up in the ancillaries.
I had Norm Breyfogle on the show. He said the fact that they used Anarchy in Batman Arkham Origins paid his medical bills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like they're getting a little bit better as we go, you know, but it's like, and I'm totally about, you know, I love that they say, you know, they do it. I don't know if they did it during Apocalypse. I didn't see it in the credits. But like during the Marvel movies, they'll have a section in the credits where, like, we'd like to thank, and then they list the creators whose stories they based the movie on.
20 creators.
Artists
there.
And writers. And I think that's really great because that's where the material for the movie originally came from.
And the attitude of the artists and writers itself has changed over the years. In, you know, up until probably mid-70s, most comic book writers and artists viewed themselves as, you know, producing hack work for children or hack work for teenagers.
Yeah.
The idea of comics as, like, works of art, you know, sacred works of art is relatively new. And so, like, Jack...
Stan Lee was embarrassed by his career for 40 years. He wanted to be a novelist or a screenwriter, and he was angry that he couldn't get out of comics.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys, like, actively despised...
Yeah.
The work that they were doing.
Yeah, Buscema hated comic books.
Yeah, he only liked drawing Conan.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he liked in his entire career. And he did beautiful comics.
Anyone who was doing comics up until Marv Wolfman were like lumpy Jews who wanted to be like architects and shit but couldn't afford.
Well, not to take away the lumpy Jew from Marv Wolfman.
No, but I'm saying like that's
have
like
you
Kirby
seen him? He's Larry David.
But Kirby and all these guys, like, they weren't trying to make comic books. They couldn't be architects, or they couldn't
afford... They couldn't be comic strip artists, which is where the money was. Chester Gould did much better than Jack Kirby in his lifetime.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, those guys are all brilliant, and they did work that'll never be touched, but it's like, it was decades before fans of comics started to make comics.
Yeah, Roy Thomas is like the first fan that gets
into
the
industry. Roy Thomas.
And then Len Wein and Marv Wolfman like follow close behind. And then guys like Neil Adams, who pretty much could have had a career drawing anything.
Yeah.
He's also had a very successful advertising career.
He's been all over the place. Yeah. He's designing theme parks.
So all the people who are obsessed.
He did a lot of, I was just watching a documentary on National Lampoon. It was called Drunk Stone Brilliant Dead. And the way the trailer pushed it, it was like, hey, Bill Murray and John Belushi. But it's really not about that. They talk about Animal House a little bit. And they talk about how pissed they were at Saturday Night Live because they stole all the writers. But Neil Adams did a ton of stuff for National Lampoon. Probably more than he drew Batman.
That's crazy.
Oh, no, I'm just going to say, so are we decided that Jack Kirby got screwed and Alan Moore wasn't? I don't know.
And all the outraged fans should go read Men of Tomorrow and the history of Marvel Comics.
Yeah, I think Jack Kirby got screwed, Alan Moore got screwed. The difference is Jack Kirby didn't have fucking 40 years of presidents to realize he was going to get screwed, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, the industry was based on newspaper publishers were reprinting comic strips, and those were comic books. Rob Ben just did a... report on the history of comic books. So he's asking me questions. He's like, what's the first comic book? I'm like, well, Action Comics number one is the first Superman. He's like, but what's the first comic book? I'm like, well, really? They're just reprinting strips.
Yeah.
And basically the publishers were like, hey, if we just get some guys to create content, we don't have to pay the guy that ran the strip. You know, it was based on doing things cheap.
Yeah.
And you know, it became a niche product because like everything in our culture, things never die. They just become niche. And they become expensive.
Yeah.
You know, with every type of music that's ever been created in America, there is a band forming now to play that kind of music. They might play it for 200 people. But nothing ever really dies.
Yeah.
Wow. How about that X-Men Apocalypse? Is that ever going to die?
Speaking of things that are not canon. Elliot, you're the only one who hasn't seen it.
I haven't seen it, so I, like everyone else on the internet, am going to base my opinion on the movie solely on what you guys tell me.
On what you hear, not on what you see.
Yeah.
We haven't spoken, actually, Stephen, Joe, and I all went together, and it's becoming our tradition. Siskel and Ebert had a tradition. They would screen stuff together, like, over the Chicago Theater, and they would go up in the elevator and say good morning. They would watch the movie. They'd go down the elevator and say nothing to each other. Possibly because they hated one another.
Did they hate one another?
They really hated one another. They were very antagonistic during the work, but they were very good friends. They were like great friends that just were at each other. Yeah.
But they said they would always save it. Their show was unscripted. Mm-hmm. And so they would save the discussion for that, and which is kind of what we started doing. Because now there's so many fucking movies. We're like half a movie podcast.
Half a movie podcast now.
But so we haven't said a word about it. So.
Well, here's the thing. Realistically, they've made like one good X-Men movie.
And it's Deadpool.
Okay, I'll give you that. So, I think it had cool things in it. There were a lot of cool moments, but I guess the bar was set so low with Batman vs. Superman that like I wasn't completely hating this movie.
No, I felt right in the middle. I found it kind of bland. I felt like, yeah, the bar was set low for Batman vs. Superman. The bar was set impossibly high by Civil War.
Yeah.
Which
but the
bar was also set high by Deadpool, which was the last X-Men movie, and Days of Future Past, which not one of my favorite movies. Lots of holes in it, but better than this.
Well, I actually disagree.
If it wasn't for Marvel Studios, we'd all be sitting here talking about what a great superhero movie this is.
Because it goes halfway now.
Yeah, well, it wasn't nearly as bad as the critics are trying to make it out to be. It wasn't quite as bad as I was afraid it was going to be. It wasn't as good as I hoped it would be. They're getting there.
But it wasn't as good as half of the X-Men movies.
It was better than
half of the X-Men movies, not as good as the other half.
I'm really confused.
Well, you don't know how to be outraged.
Yeah, I know.
Here's the thing.
It's better than half and not as good as the other, and 3 out of 6, and what?
Yeah. Go,
I don't like you half as well as I know you.
And then
you
a pinch of oregano.
Yes.
Go watch the first X-Men movie, and I'll give it credit for being like the first major superhero movie, because fuck Blade, that was rated R and that was a vampire movie.
It was a horror movie.
The first X movie is like your first superhero movie that's like in the 20th century that kind of sets the bar, right? That movie's awful. It's not good. And Iron Man and the Marvel movies that came after kind of redefined how to do a superhero movie. So at this point, if X-Men can't get its shit together to be as good as Civil War, stop making X-Men movies.
There
and
have
give the
been
rights back
nine
to
X-Men movies.
Seriously, so
in,
it's like
in 16 years there have been nine,
and
movies.
They can't figure out what they're doing. Like I liked First Class, but like all the other X-Men movies, not that great.
No, I like the ones I liked. I mean, are we counting Deadpool? We're not counting Deadpool.
I'd count it as an X-Men movie.
Sure, Deadpool is goddamn great.
Yeah, Deadpool is great.
I bought the Blu-ray this week. I watched it again, and it was better the second time.
Yeah.
Like, knowing what was coming, kind of, it's the Evil Dead 2 of superhero movies. It's just balls out crazy and gets away with being balls out crazy. I was hoping there is a post-credit sequence. I was hoping Deadpool would show up because if they're going to put the franchise on anybody, because Hugh Jackman keeps talking about quitting the way Robert Downey Jr. keeps talking about quitting, if they got to find a new guy, they got him. Like, Ryan Reynolds put his whole career, he bet his whole career on this one movie, and it paid off.
Yeah, he'll do this forever.
They should have just dragged him into this movie for 2 seconds, which he would have done.
My question is, I mean, and well, oh, first, feel free to spoil me on two things. But okay. One, there is a post credit scene. I've heard rumors, Mr. Sinister, or is that?
Yeah.
The name Essex is on a suitcase.
Yes.
So people are like, oh, Mr. Sinister, which actually I didn't even put it together.
Yeah.
I kept looking at the X at the end of the word, and I was like, okay, who is that code
Nathaniel
for?
Essex is Sinister's real name, so he's going to be like a business guy that steals like Wolverine's blood or DNA and is going to clone and make X-23.
Yeah, that's the final scene. I will say Hugh Jackman does have a really good cameo. He's in one full scene. He's total Weapon X. He's got like the Barry Windsor Smith gear on him, right, and he goes ape shit and kills like 30 guys and there's blood.
Which would have been an awesome scene if Marvel didn't or Fox didn't blow their load and show us his claws in the trailer.
Well, they had to because they were getting the feeling that people weren't going to go, and like
that moment would have been like a thousand times better in the movie if we didn't know it was coming.
Yeah, but you know what? They also did it after the Civil War trailer that showed Spider-Man.
Yeah, I agree. The same shit. It's like these guys can't help but blow their fucking load on the trailer, and it's like.
But that goes back to what John's saying. There's obviously a lack of confidence. Everybody's watching the Marvel Studios movies and thinking, oh my God, we can't do that. How do we do that? Sony gave up and just said, here, Marvel Studios, we're on our creation. You know, they don't want to make a decent Fantastic Four movie. They've just given up. They're just like, okay, we'll throw any old crap out there just to preserve the rights to it.
Yeah.
Which is the history of Fantastic Four movies right. from the beginning.
Right.
It's what Roger Corman did in the 90s.
But that's what's so frustrating about Apocalypse is like there are scenes that are as good as anything that Marvel Studios pumped out. There's a scene where Quicksilver has his first action scene. Everything about that scene is perfect, from the music to his acting to the CGI to the little jokes that they throw into that scene.
Yeah, but it's
perfect.
But it's kind of remember how much everybody liked that scene in Days of Future Past. Let's do it
exactly.
Again.
But it worked, and they figured out that it worked. There are other scenes like that that really, really work. The problem is there are other scenes that are just so clunky where you can just see them all of a sudden pulling back and saying, whoa, 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 we can't get too crazy here because we don't have any confidence in ourselves. So a certain dialogue that turns out just clunky. I mean, I know that they were quoting the books themselves often verbatim.
Or the animated series.
Or the earlier movies. This movie ends, and here's a spoiler, his movie ends with a scene between Magneto and Professor X that is word for word the end of X-Men 1.
Yeah, it's like the
repeated they even show the clips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so which brings me to the thing, because the other thing I got out of this was, okay, like X-Men First Class right now is my favorite X-Men movie out of all of them at this point.
Including Deadpool?
Okay, well, Deadpool is a spin-off movie.
Yeah, but, it's of its own self.
Right. So, and I remember saying, I remember calling X-Men First Class the movie that saves the franchise.
Yeah.
Because, remember, before that was X-Men United, and that pretty much killed it.
Oh, yeah, it was awful.
But we have gotten four movies since that one.
Since one. And then you got X-Men Days of Future Past, which is essentially X-Men First Class again. Because again, Magneto is a Deus Ex Machina at the end of everything.
But Days of Future Past is the Star Trek Generations of X Men.
But there you go. There you go. The thing that got me though, why Days of Future Past works for me, is because we got Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen back again when we thought we'd never see them again in those roles.
Right.
And I remember the reason Days of Future Past works for me is because I have that emotional connection with the characters and those actors.
Yeah.
Right. My problem, I don't mean to cut you off, my problem is I have the emotional connection with those actors. I don't know that I have the emotional connection to those characters.
Well, you're not 16 anymore.
No, but yeah. I mean, but it's been 16 years of watching these movies, and it felt like anytime they tried to evoke the older movies, like it opens, you know, the X-Men movies have their way of opening where Professor X starts talking about mutants, and it's James McAvoy here, and I go, oh, yeah, I guess there are traditions to this, the way Bond has traditions of like, we got to have him walk into a gun barrel now, and there's got to be silhouettes of girls over a song. And sometimes when you watch Bond movies, you feel like these aren't being made out of a sense of love of that franchise. These are being made out of like, we think we can make a good movie out of this. And which is why I keep interjecting with Deadpool, because I feel like Deadpool's the only movie in this entire franchise where the guy making it fucking loved that character. I don't even think that Hugh Jackman loves Wolverine. I think he is very, very grateful for Wolverine. And I think he's always willing to put in the extra time, which is why he's in this movie, which is why he had one line in First Class. I think he knows what it did for him, but I don't think he loves Logan.
Yeah, I think kind of like to the point you're making, but more to Joe's point, is like you're saying, is it's Deadpool was something where they weren't pulling their punches. They fucking went for it. And that movie could have been a bomb, but they bet big and it paid off big. This movie, Apocalypse, is just like Joe said. It's like they they just keep like holding their own and like themselves back.
It's a much, much bigger budget than Deadpool.
Yeah.
But the thing with Deadpool is not only did they didn't pull their punches on that movie because they knew what it was because they loved what it was. And they were like, no, it's this. We're doing this. The same way like Guillermo del Toro made great Hellboy movies was because he kept fighting the studio who wanted to make him not red and drive a car.
Well, do you think Civil War is everybody on Civil War, from the directors to the producers to the actors, loved everything that they were doing? Or do you think that it was? I think that they know what they have, but they still made a really fucking great movie.
I think Kevin Feige loves Marvel. I get that feeling with everything he does. And that's why they promote Geoff Johns to run DC. He loves DC. He's better at some characters than others. Batman's not one of his strongest characters, but you need somebody there. You need your Stan Lee in the 70s. You know, now Stan Lee's just happy to be a celebrity.
Yeah.
But you need somebody in the center, and their center has been Bryan Singer, who is a very serious filmmaker who didn't know who the X-Men was when he got the job for the first one.
And ruined Superman, but yeah.
Yeah, Zack Snyder did more damage to Superman than Bryan Singer did.
I think at least
I still say about Superman Returns, if it was 45 minutes shorter, it would be good. It's got a good cast, a good story, it's shot well.
If Superman punches somebody and it's 45 minutes shorter, we don't get Zack Snyder Superman. Thus, I blame Bryan Singer for Zack Snyder even getting Superman.
Yeah, I think it is.
So do you also blame Tim Burton for Batman and Robin?
No, but Tim Burton didn't want to do the third Batman.
Didn't want him to do the third Batman either.
Well, the second one, yeah.
They shouldn't have taken the reins off him in the second one.
Yeah, he just made a Tim Burton movie, which is why I like Batman Returns. That's
so dumb. Superman Returns, I think, is a good Superman movie. It's like a love letter to those first two Superman movies. But I agree with Elliot that he literally gets the shit kicked out of him in that movie. And it's like, I think that guy played a better Superman, and
Brandon
he seemed
Ralph.
More...
Well, Brandon Routh was awesome.
He seemed
I
more
Brandon
like
Ra-
Superman. He
Brandon
smiled.
Routh just showed up on Maria Bamford's Netflix show. Like, he's still working. He's still out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he's not like
he
a huge
okay.
name. But
he's tomorrow. He's still in there.
Yeah, he's the Adam. He's doing okay. But I think Zack Snyder is the studio's taking a 180 from... what's his name? Bryan Singer. And then the other problem is, does anyone remember why X-Men 3 was such a train wreck shit show? It's because Bryan Singer left to do Superman. Right. So then,
and we got a lame Superman movie and a terrible X-Men movie.
So then why was Fox like, oh, you want to come back to do X-Men? You fucked us on X-Men 3, but sure, come on back.
X-Men 3 and then Wolverine Origins were such bombs, and they don't have that guy.
They don't have the
Feige who goes, this is who the characters are. This is, you know, if they had hired, I'm not saying this would have been the right choice, but if they had hired Chris Claremont to be a producer on these things,
they could
always have a guy to go back to and say, who are these characters and is this right and is this wrong?
And I think that was a big problem I had with this movie is when the Marvel movies make a Marvel movie, everything still makes sense for the comics. Okay, Tony Stark wasn't in Vietnam. He was in Afghanistan. But I get it. You updated it. That makes sense. But Nightcrawler and Mystique are like 2 years apart in this movie. Does anyone remember who Nightcrawler's fucking mother is?
Yeah.
And it's like, so Bryan Singer doesn't know that Mystique is supposed to be Nightcrawler's mother, or he knows and doesn't care. But it's like, it's stuff like that where it's like he doesn't know who any of the X-Men are, or any of their relationships. It's like, oh yeah, Mystique's going to be the leader of the X-Men. In what fucking universe is that her character?
In the universe where Jennifer Lawrence is an A-list star.
And I get that she's an A-list star, but the X-Men movies, more than any other franchise, has the perfect motive and story to move away from the problem that Marvel has. The problem Marvel has is they don't want to pay Robert Downey Jr. a bajillion dollars to do the next Avengers, but he's Iron Man. With the X-Men, it's like, okay, here's the new group of X-Men. Jennifer Lawrence is Mystique, this person's this. Then the next movie, get rid of them all. All right, here's the new group of mutants. Here's Sunfire and Thunderbird and these other guys. Go find the next young generation of actors and have a whole new team of X-Men with like two or three layovers.
Yeah, and that's why I think the future of this franchise... again, Deadpool is showing you the way because we know we're getting Deadpool 2. We know Cable is in it.
Yeah.
We know Hugh Jackman is saying the next Wolverine movie, he's done, he's out. It's supposed to be based on Old Man Logan, so really nobody else is going to be in it. Although Patrick Stewart said he's coming back. And then there's all this talk about this X-Force movie. If you think Deadpool is not going to be in the middle of an X-Force movie after introducing Cable...
Oh, yeah.
Let's just stop making X-Men movies then, because if if Deadpool does that well and then X-Force does well, you can do that. You can just keep bringing in mutants. What makes me mad looking back at Days of Future Past was Days of Future Past was like, we're going to clean up all the shit. Okay, we created two different franchises in here. We're going to bring them both together, show you how it all fits. At the end of the movie, look, here's Kelsey Grammer as the Beast, and here's Famke Janssen as Jean Grey. And like we made everything work again. And then in this movie, we introduce Cyclops again, and which absolutely contradicts anything that happened in Wolverine Origins.
Yeah.
We make Jean Grey the Phoenix young. We show Jean Grey meet Professor X in an entirely different way than we did in X-Men 3. So they were trying to say X-Men 3 and Wolverine Origins didn't happen because you didn't like them. But here's Kelsey Grammer as the Beast.
It's fan service.
So what, but like, what counts and what doesn't? I have 9 movies, a couple of which may or may not be in this franchise anymore.
If you watch them chronologically, they don't make any sense.
No, it's like Aliens or Planet of the Apes. It reminded me of the old Planet of the Apes movies where they would blow up the Earth and every movie was supposed to be the last movie. Or Aliens. Every movie was supposed to be the last movie. Or Nightmare on Elm Street was like that. Horror movies are always like that because you have to kill...
everyone.
You have to kill the monster so dead that he doesn't come back the way he comes back 3 times at the end of the third act.
Right.
So you have to kill him in a way that it's like almost... that you leave that theater thinking, you can't bring this guy back. And then they go, hey, here's part 5, Jason Lives.
Right.
And then they have some convoluted, stupid way of bringing him back. That's what the Planet of the Apes movies do. And that's what X-Men's starting to do.
That's what the comics do.
Yeah, and that's why I quit. You know, and that's why X-Men is not the biggest comic franchise anymore.
That's when the comics are at their worst, is when they don't have a game plan or they just let writers just write whatever they want without any editorial oversight. That's why DC's been such a mess for 5 years, because they have 52 ongoing monthly titles that they can't keep an eye on.
And they, you know? And they didn't say what counted and what didn't when they rebooted the
timeline.
Right,
and they were fucking around with timelines. Action Comics was 5 years in the past. Justice League was in the present.
And, you know, as you guys know, I stuck with Batman, and they were like, Tim Drake was never Robin, and all the Neil Adams stories happened, but he's wearing his new 52 suit. And it was just like this cherry pick and choose. It's like fan fiction, but at a corporate level being shown to the masses of this is the one way this character is.
Yeah.
And that's what these movies are starting to do.
And I think that's my biggest problem with like the X-Men movies is... It'd be one thing if there wasn't any other example of giant sequel team movies to show them how to fucking do it, and they're still just like, I don't know how to make it, and it's like...
So they need a Kevin... So X-Men needs its own version of Kevin Feige to say, here's our phase one, here's our phase two, here's our phase three. These 4 movies are in phase one, these 5 movies are phase two, and these however many movies are phase three.
And it doesn't even have to be like phases.
Everybody needs that.
And there's a joke in the...
He seems to be the only guy doing it. Even Joss Whedon wasn't doing it.
There's a joke in the movie where like the new young X-Men go to a mall to see Return of the Jedi. And as they're walking out, Jean Grey says something like, well, everyone knows the third movie's the worst. And it's supposed to be a dig on the third X-Men movie. The problem is, this is the third First Class movie.
Yeah,
you're
and
taking a shit on your own movie. It's like you don't even realize what you're saying.
I thought they were trying to be meta in that joke. And I noticed, I'd actually read it in an article before, so I was aware when it was coming up. It didn't get one laugh in that theater. It just died. It completely died. And then I think they were trying to be meta of like, yeah, we're not going to be as good as Days of Future Past. But then again, I was thinking, is this the third? No, isn't this 8? Wait, is this 9? Wait, it was like, where are we? And I feel like Sony did a better job with Spider-Man of keeping their continuity straight. We had a Raimi trilogy the way we had a Nolan trilogy.
Yeah.
And we started out again, and these aren't good. So guess what? They're done. And now we're just going to integrate it into the Marvel Universe. But I know that. You know, when that Spider-Man movie happens, I think we'll know pretty quickly if he did fight the Green Goblin, if he did fight Dr. Octopus, or if there'll be new characters. In X-Men, I have no idea.
Yeah. And I would assume that it all is in the same fucked up continuity. But it's like, at this point, the best thing they can do is Fox can just work out whatever deal that Sony did with Marvel and say, all right, we need you to take over the X-Men. And then all Marvel has to do is like, okay, well, and when Infinity War comes up, they've got a reality gem, and there's 2 separate timelines. One's an X-Men timeline, one's an Avengers timeline. Now we're going to bring them together and rewrite everything.
That's not going to happen.
It won't, but it should. Because it's like these guys, they clearly don't know what the fuck they're doing. And I don't know what the box office results for this movie are going to be.
It's doing pretty well.
Like it's Joe said, I don't think it's as bad as everyone says it is. And I like it more than Days of Future Past. I wasn't that impressed with Days of Future Past. That's a great comic, and that's a bad movie. And why they keep giving the reins to Bryan Singer, the guy who doesn't know anything about X-Men. Let's be clear. Bryan Singer is homosexual. He is. And the X-Men...
So is your entire family. Go on.
So is my entire family and every single person I currently live with. But what I'm saying is... the X-Men is the perfect venue for the homosexual experience.
He does play with that. X-Men 2, he does a good job.
He does, and he should. Yeah. And it's something... Phil Jimenez is also homosexual. And he said the same thing. He said... He's never read, that's why the X-Men speak to him so much, because it's about being persecuted for being born different. It is the perfect fictional vessel for growing up queer in a non-queer society, whatever you want to call it.
Or growing up black.
Or going through puberty.
Which is why it's always your favorite book in high school.
Right. And that's why it makes so much sense. And that's the connection. And X-Men needs that connection, I think, because it does service that for the minority community. But he doesn't know anything about the comics, so, you know, they say, hey, Apocalypse is a big villain. Okay, give me the cliff notes. He's the first mutant, he's Egyptian, he's a big blue guy. And he's like, okay, cool, we'll check all those boxes. But it doesn't make any sense. Like, that movie's riddled with problems. Why was Apocalypse's temple in the beginning of that movie have these trap doors that could knock the temple down underground and bury everyone? In the movie... Their Beast gives, like, Mystique a tour of the X-Mansion. He's like, yeah, look, here's the room where I'm building the Blackbird, and I'm building it all by myself, and I'm going to build the basketball court's going to open and be the hangar. And she's like, oh, that's really cool. And then later in the movie, they go to the X-Men, they go to the Weapon X facility, and they're like, we're going to steal this jet. Why wasn't that the jet they stole? And then later, the mansion gets blown up, and then why wasn't, when the mansion got blown up, why didn't Beast say, hey, now that we have a chance to rebuild the mansion, let's make it so the basketball thing...
And how the fuck did Nightcrawler, Jean Grey, and Cyclops get out of that helicopter?
Yeah.
And there's another problem of the continuity, is Nightcrawler's in this in the 80s, which... invalidates X-Men 2, which is a movie we liked.
Yeah.
Because they meet Nightcrawler in X-Men 2.
Right, but now he's one of the first X-Men. And
he looks like Alan Cumming. He looks like he's the same version. There's also Angel who turns into Archangel, who cannot possibly be the Angel in X-Men 3.
Right.
Also, this movie takes place in the 80s, but everybody looks the exact same age they were in Days of Future
Past.
Yeah,
that was weird because
I mean, James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender are supposed to be 20 years older than First Class.
Yeah.
And they look the 4 years it took to make those two movies.
Mystique is supposed to be this like mutant hero and 10 years older than she was in Days of Future Past, and they're like, oh, Mystique, the great mutant hero, and it's like, what? And it's like, okay, they did the thing with...
Well, because of Days of Future Past.
Because of Days of Future Past, but she looks like she's only 2 or 3 years older, because it's like, it's just...
Quicksilver has a line where he says, oh, all I've done is stay in that same basement for the last 10 years. It's like, why did you have to set this movie in 83? Set it in 77.
Yeah, and
like make it 3 years later.
But I don't mind the every decade there's a new threat. I kind of like the idea that every movie's in a different decade to kind of showcase the different villains.
But they didn't really take advantage of it. It didn't look like an 80s movie.
But that's what I'm saying.
There was some, like, it explained Jubilee.
Yeah, and they went to the go see Return of the Jedi at a mall, but it's like, it just had a lot
of
problems.
Yeah, they could have seen Star Wars at a mall.
Right, but that's what I'm saying, is it wasn't like... I don't think this movie had any less problems than Days of Future Past. I think it has just as many. I think there's a lot of cool moments in it, but overall, it's just like, it's another X-Men movie. They didn't dazzle me, you know? It had some cool moments,
exactly.
But it's like...
a movie of moments. And some moments are awesome, and some just clank on the floor,
like,
and
Apocalypse,
you just sit there and stare at them.
Apocalypse wants his whole plan. He wants to destroy the Earth. So
he has all the nuclear weapons.
He hijacks all the nuclear weapons, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to destroy the Earth. And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to destroy the Earth. And then he just shoots him out into space. He's like, yeah, no more nuclear weapons. And then Magneto had, what was he doing? I'm going to pull all the metal out of the Earth. Okay. But then at the end of this movie, they had a really cool chance to be like, hey, the world's been nuclear disarmed. We could have global peace. And instead they're like, and in today's news, every nation's rebuilding their nuclear arsenals, and the cities are being rebuilt. So everything's hunky-dory.
And we all hate mutants.
Again. And it's like, and Magneto's a good guy again. It's like, how many times is Magneto going to leave the X-Men at the end of the movies being like, this is the last time we team up to fight a threat? And it's like, just join the X-Men. Have him just join the X-Men like they did in the comics.
They had Mystique just join the X-Men like she didn't in the comics.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, they're fucking idiots.
So final question is, Elliot, do you now want to see X-Men Apocalypse?
I'm conflicted here.
Well, here's the thing. I do think people should see it. I think it's worth seeing. There's a lot of cool stuff.
It's okay.
But it's just okay. Don't get your hopes up. It's another X-Men movie where it's like, it's worth seeing, but it's like, eh.
It's worth seeing, but it's a fucking wreck. That's what I've heard from you.
Well, what
yes.
is it?
Yes, absolutely.
I feel like it creates bigger problems, not so much in this movie, but towards the entire franchise, where Days of Future Past was so much about fixing it, and Apocalypse just goes in and makes all the same things that broke it in the first place.
So it seems to me that this movie suffers from Star Trek Into Darkness, which is essentially, it keeps repeating all the mistakes of the previous bits and amplifies them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot of like, hey, like John said, remember how that cool scene with Quicksilver? Here he is again doing cool stuff. And it's like, yeah, we saw this already.
Yeah, I didn't even think it was that cool because it didn't like go anywhere that the scene in Days of Future Past didn't go. It was just, oh, he was doing it fighting villains instead of like saving everyone in a kitchen.
Yeah, well, and also too, it's like, it's another problem they have with the powers in this is like, you know, they make Quicksilver so powerful. It's like the X-Men mansion blows up and he gets like 100 students out of it like while it's blowing up. And it's like,
that's Flash level fast.
Yeah, he is
definitely Flash level. And definitely.
That's the problem with the Flash. When a guy can move as fast as light, what's a guy with a gun that shoots icebergs going to do? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like he's too powerful.
That is like the exact opposite of what you would want to shoot at a guy who can run it. An iceberg, because bergs they're not very fast.
They're not known for their speed.
But they are bigger than they appear, so he would try to run around it and hit more.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess this talk has been kind of spoiler free. So you can, so if you listen to the end, we haven't ruined it much. But you know, we're at hour six, so you can follow me and Not On My Book on Twitter for all the Caffeinated Comics news. Follow our Facebook page, where we're always posting things as soon as we find out about them. And you can listen to us on iTunes, you can listen to us on Stitcher, and you can follow, listen to every episode since, 2012 on, caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com.
And you can follow me at ZenMasterGuy on Twitter.
Elliot?
You can follow me at Elliot Serrano, 2 L's, 2 T's, 2 R's, both on Twitter and Instagram, and also watch, follow me on Facebook, Elliot.Serrano, where I posted a live video, a Facebook live video of the Caffeinated Comics podcast right before we went on.
Pre-podcast.
Right.
It sounded a lot like this. Any comics coming up?
Homies. Number one should be coming out in October, and then we'll see what comes after that. I'm sorry. Army of Darkness, Ash for President.
How did you forget that?
Yeah, sorry. If people got angry about Captain America, they're going to get angry about this one.
That's awesome.
Oh, by the way, to answer a question from our last podcast, Ash vs. Evil Dead Blu-ray comes out in August.
Yes.
Which I know you didn't work on, but apparently they stole a lot.
They stole a lot of my stuff from me. Oh, by the way, can I give a real quick review of DC Rebirth, my review of DC Rebirth?
Yes. Yeah, let's have it.
Okay, so a duck, a penguin, and a chicken walk into a bar. Joe, finish the joke for me.
I'll finish that joke in 52 twice monthly titles.
Right. You can find me at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Thank